second case for oral argument this morning is Brett Jarman, appellant, versus Dairyland Insurance Company, appellee. For the appellant is Mr. Patrick Ginsbach, an attorney from Hot Springs. And for the appellee, Dairyland, is Robert Anderson, an attorney from Pierre. Mr. Ginsbach, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court. My name is Pat Ginsbaugh, and I represent Brett Jarman, who was the defendant and the appellant in this matter. Mr. Jarman is contending that in this case the circuit court erred in enforcing the Wyoming foreign judgment because Wyoming did not have personal jurisdiction over him at the time the default judgment was rendered. The facts in this case are pretty straightforward. Jarman is a South Dakota resident living in Edgemont, Fall River County. At the time the lawsuit was commenced, he was working as a sky marshal for the United States government and was stationed in Chicago on a temporary basis. He had been involved in a car accident approximately 2 years before when he and a neighbor had went to Wyoming to help move a woman back to Edgemont. When they were coming back, they had a one-car accident. He was the driver. He discovered after the accident that his insurance coverage had lapsed. Dairyland Insurance was the auto insurance carrier for the passenger, and they provided coverage for the passenger's injuries under her uninsured motorist provisions. Dairyland then sued Jarman in Wyoming using the Wyoming non-resident motorist statute to try to affect service of process. They served the Wyoming Secretary of State, and then they mailed the notice that they'd served the Wyoming Secretary of State and a copy of the summons and complaint to Jarman at a street address in Edgemont. The problem is that Edgemont doesn't have street delivery mail delivery service. They only have post office box delivery. Jarman's driver's license indicated his correct mailing address was P.O. Box. The accident report indicated that there was a P.O. Box for Mr. Jarman, and instead Dairyland used the mail through the street with no explanation where it came up with the street address. The letter was mailed, certified mail, but it was returned by the postmistress as refused. There was no other attempt to obtain service on Jarman after that, and a default judgment was taken in Wyoming.
What significance is the fact that he chose to refuse it?
Well, we contend he didn't refuse it because in the record it shows that at the time the postmaster stamped that is refused on December 22nd, he was in Chicago, Illinois.
Where is that in the record?
It should be in Jarman's reply affidavit.
The reply, okay.
And in there was a second mailing that came out, and that was after the default judgment was entered, and that was shown as unclaimed. But the record is clear that the only postal delivery in Edgemont is through the post office mailing. There's no explanation by Dairyland why it used the street address or where it came up with that street address for Jarman. In particular, that the Wyoming Highway Accident Report indicates that there's a P.O. box for the driver of the pickup, and the driver's license abstract here for the state of South Dakota shows Jarman's address on his driver's license as a P.O. box in Edgemont, South Dakota. Now, Jarman contends that because Dairyland did not serve him personally, as the Wyoming non-resident statute required, or served him by certified mail, and so that they had a return receipt showing that he actually received notice, that their service was defective and that, therefore, there was no personal jurisdiction over him.
Has the statute of limitations now run on the tort so that this is an all-or-nothing deal?
Yes, the statute of limitations would have run. Although there is some theory in Wyoming that by serving the Wyoming Secretary of State, you've told the statute of limitations. So I'm not sure it's an all-or-nothing deal. If this court determined that you weren't going to enforce the foreign judgment, then I guess that'd be up to Dairyland how they wanted to proceed from there. They'd still have their Wyoming judgment. But based upon our research, it's not clear whether or not Wyoming would find that the statute of limitations is run.
Thank you.
Now, the reasoning that we ask the court to adopt is that we believe that the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, the Due Process Clause, gives a non-resident motorist a protected interest in receiving actual notice. Now, I know this court has addressed the issue in a 2000 case, Lacandus versus Benatti, in which, in that case, in interpreting our own non-motorist coverage or non-motorist resident statute, non-resident motorist statute, the court said that there was ineffective service when the notice wasn't mailed to the last known address of the non-resident motorist. Wyoming has went one step further, and they've said in Dyer and Culley versus Dyer that they recognize that the 14th Amendment does provide a protected interest to non-resident motorists, and that the burden is on the plaintiff to show that there was due diligence to try to give that actual notice to the defendant. And in the Culley versus Dyer case, it was remanded back to the district court in Wyoming to make a determination as to whether or not the plaintiff had used due diligence. We believe that that's not necessary in this case here for the court to do that. We believe that you can rule and reverse the circuit court because clearly from the facts that were established in the record, Dairyland didn't use due diligence. Now, unlike in Dyer versus Culley, or Culley versus Dyer in the Wyoming case, the plaintiff in that case attempted to serve the defendant personally by the sheriff. And the sheriff sent back an affidavit saying he couldn't find the defendant in that county. So then, in Culley versus Dyer, the plaintiff sent to an incomplete address for the defendant, sent another copy of the notice to the defendant's insurance adjuster, and sent another copy to the defendant's employer, attempting to use due diligence to find the defendant. In this case, that wasn't what happened here. They used the street address and gave no explanation to the circuit court where they came up with that street address or why they used it. Jarman, in his reply affidavit, in the record that was established, showed that he had a P.O. box in Edgemont, that his driver's license that he'd given to the Wyoming Highway Patrol officer showed the P.O. box address. And the South Dakota statute allows for a person, any person, to send in $2 to the South Dakota Department of Motor Vehicles and request a driving abstract of a person's driver's license. And on that abstract, it would show your mailing address that was listed on your driver's license. But Dairyland didn't do that either. Instead, and they didn't try to send it to the sheriff to have the sheriff serving. So we believe that they didn't use any due diligence at all or give any explanation to the circuit court why they were able to rely upon just a street address to try to serve Jarman when there was only post office.
If we agree with your argument, would it be more appropriate for us to remand it for a due diligence hearing?
Well, that's one of your options. But my contention is that we had an opportunity to make the record before the circuit court. And at that time, an affidavit was filed by the council out of Wyoming as to what their efforts were. And all they simply stated was that they'd mailed it certified mail, that they'd received it back as being refused. They gave no explanation why they used the street address. That was their opportunity. And so to now give them a second bite at the apple, we believe isn't fair. We went into the hearing, and we actually think the record is replete, that we gave them a continuance so that they'd have an opportunity to adequately prepare for that hearing, and we took the opportunity to refile a reply affidavit to set forth the facts to show that there wasn't proper service on Jarman. And so that's why we don't believe that it's necessary for you to send it back for a remand hearing to determine if the plaintiff used due diligence in this case. We believe that based upon this record, you can reverse the circuit court and find that the order should not be enforceable. I guess just based upon the holding of the Wyoming Supreme Court in Culley versus Dyer, we asked this court to find that the circuit court erred in enforcing the Wyoming foreign judgment and to reverse and vacate that order.
Let me ask you this. Judge Trimble entered a conclusion of law, number 8, where he said that Wyoming jurisdiction could not be defeated by refusal of the certified mail. Where did that come from?
Well, in their affidavit filed by the Wyoming lawyer, he showed a copy of the certified mailing where the postmistress had sent back the envelope, and on it she had checked, it's a stamp, and it's next to the unclaimed portion. There's a box that says refused. She checked refused, and then next to it, we don't know who wrote it in, but there's a date 12/22/05. We know from the postmark that it was mailed on 12/20, so we assume that the postmistress stamped it on 12/22. That's why we know where Jarman was on 12/22, actually for the week of December 20th, that he wasn't in Edgemont to refuse it. So We don't know if she refused it because, if she made the decision to refuse it because there was no P.O. box that she could deliver it to. So our contention is it wasn't Jarman that refused the mailing. It was refused by the postmistress because they don't do street delivery.
Okay. One other thing, which state's law applies to the jurisdictional requirements here?
Wyoming.
Is the Collier case or is it our case?
I believe it's the Collier case, Your Honor.
Thank you. Nobody's chastised for quitting early. Mr. Anderson, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please support. My name is Rob Anderson. I represent Dairyland in this appeal and in the South Dakota action. This is, I guess we'd all agree, probably a legal question, but like most legal questions, it's going to turn on the facts, which are really determinative here. And I think there's some confusion about some of the facts, and I think the record is clear on most, if not all, but not all of them. Mr. Jarman has repeatedly, this theme comes up in his affidavits, to which he filed, and in his briefs, and today at the argument, quite appropriately, I think, said that, hey, I gave the Wyoming officer my correct mailing address, and I gave him the P.O. box number. But what he never mentions is that there's no question that this accident report was wrong, because the P.O. box address that Mr. Jarman claims he had back then was in Edgemont. The accident report says it's in Hot Springs. I don't think that's, I want to make sure that's clear to everybody, and I'm going to mention it a little more in just a bit. In the first affidavit Mr. Jarman filed, he stated he lived in Edgemont in paragraph 5. Paragraph 9, he stated that when he received the accident report shortly after the accident, he says, and at the time the accident report, a copy of which Affiant received, clearly had Affiant's name and address listed in the accident report. He doesn't say it was accurate, and I don't know if that's just an omission or it's a disingenuous effort to kind of compound the extreme confusion this case had from the get-go. But in any event, his address wasn't correct on the accident report. In the reply affidavit filed by Mr. Jarman later, he stated that his address at the time was P.O. Box 113 in Edgemont. However, if the court looks at Exhibit 7 to that part of the record, which is CR007, and it's page 14 of the settled record, there's a copy of the Wyoming accident report. The Wyoming accident report states that his address was P.O. Box 113, Hot Springs, South Dakota, with the Hot Springs zip. And it was faxed, indicating at the top of the document you have in your record, faxed to someone in Hot Springs in July of 2003, after the accident occurred in March. Now, obviously, Mr. Jarman was mistaken in his first affidavit when he said that he saw the accident report and it was accurate, if my reading of the report indicates that he meant to say it was accurate. If he meant to say, I saw the P.O. box, which was right, but the town was wrong, then that's fine. Then his affidavit is correct. I call this to the court's attention because of the confusion here. It's constantly been argued that his P.O. box was correct. P.O. box wasn't correct. It was in the wrong town. It was a clearly, admittedly erroneous accident report.
Isn't this what you label as confusion, and confuses me, even a more compelling argument for personal service to make sure he gets it?
No. Not at all, because what happened, when Dairyland's counsel in Wyoming found out that this was a non-existent address that was on the accident report, he sent it for service on the street address in Edgemont. And I will tell the court that I don't see anywhere in the record where it explains how they got that street address. That's right.
Isn't that the problem here? We don't have any documentation about whether that was his real address. Isn't that the key here?
There isn't an explanation in the record, Your Honor, about how Dairyland's counsel found that the, I think it's whatever, 8th Street address in Edgemont was his correct address. I guess I would say that there hasn't been one place that Mr. Jarman in the affidavits he's filed has ever said, I never have lived at that address, my family doesn't live at that address, my spouse doesn't live at that address, has never lived at that address, I don't own that property. No, he's never said that. I know that that's moving the burden back to him, but it would be a further explanation, because if you read these other cases, the Lekanidis case and all the other cases, the first thing the defendant Benedetti did in Lekanidis was say, hey, that's not my address. I live at such and such. So far, right up to the point we appear here in court, other than the address used by Dairyland to send this to the street address in Edgemont, we've never seen an address for Mr. Jarman. Never. It's never told us where he lives. It's further compounded by the fact that although he states he uses a P.O. box on his driver's license, I know this from experience, South Dakota law says you have to have your residence address on your driver's license. Because if you go to Game Fish and Parks and want your deer licenses sent to your P.O. box so your wife doesn't see how many you're getting, they won't do it. The SDCL 3212.17.10 says that you have to have a residence address.
Well, if we don't know where this gentleman lives, how does that help your position?
Yeah, it helps my position because the Postal Service responded in a way that other jurisdictions have recognized is appropriate to show due diligence and appropriate service by mail. And you can look and see what they did. This was a critical factor for the court in the Lekanidis case and in all other cases from other jurisdictions you read. Dairyland sent this. Now, I disagree with Mr. Ginsbaugh, respectfully, that the record is crystal clear or clear on the fact that you can't send mail to a street address in Edgemont. That is not what the documentation here shows. One of the exhibits to CR-012 in the record is the envelope that came back to the Dairyland Council after he sent this for service to Mr. Brett Jarman at 502 8th Street in Edgemont. Had the typical stamp on it, much like the one that was discussed in the Lekanidis case by the court, and it clearly says refused. Now,
is that the only evidence you have, though, that they do make street address deliveries in Edgemont?
I think it's pretty persuasive evidence. I think I'd rather leave it to the Postal Service in Edgemont, which handled this and returned this envelope, than I would to Mr. Jarman. They could have checked any of these other boxes. In my brief, I included an excerpt from the decision in Miserandino versus Resort Properties, where they talk about exactly what this means. These terms are terms of art, and they mean something to people who work in the Postal Service. You check a box for a reason. Mr. Ginsbaugh suggests the refused box was checked because you couldn't deliver this to a street address. Well, there were a lot of other options that are appropriate had that been the case.
But don't we still come down to the problem of what was his address? I mean, we could have a situation where a dishonest plaintiff could send a notice to the wrong address, get a default judgment.
That may be true, Your Honor. You know,
I'm not saying that's happening here, but I'm just saying that without some kind of documentation that this is his real address, that kind of a circumstance could occur.
Well, I think if, for example, had this envelope come back to the Wyoming Council, or Colorado Council, excuse me, and said, you know, moved, left no address, not deliverable as addressed. Now, that's what the manual, according to the Miserandino case, says, and that's what I think a reasonable person would think if they got this envelope back and the Postal Service had checked not deliverable as addressed. You'd say, hey, I better find a new address. This thing came back and it said refused. Now, if you knew the manual or if you're a reasonable person, you would look at those other boxes and think, well, the other circumstances don't exist. What happened is that Mr. Jarman refused this. Service is complete. I think that's reasonable due diligence.
How do you know it's Mr. Jarman who refused it as opposed to somebody else who might have been at that address?
Could have been a spouse, and I guess they'd have the right to refuse that. I don't know that.
But it could have been a brother or a sister. It could have been a stranger. It could have been a guest. It could have been a young kid who...
It could have been Mr. and Mrs. Smedley, and it could have been the wrong address when they said, well, I'm not taking
it. I don't think it was the wrong address. Something else should have been done with this envelope had that been the case, Your Honor.
Doesn't it all come down to the fact, though, that when you look at the Wyoming affidavit from Dairyland's counsel in Wyoming, he really doesn't indicate what due diligence he did, other than the fact he sent the letter at the last known address, which is really kind of a conclusion of law, and there's really no factual showing in his affidavit that establishes due diligence, I guess, his belief that 502 8th Street, Edgemont, was the last known address.
It's not in his affidavit, and as I said before, I don't think it is in the record. I've seen a letter. I'm not going to tell you what it says. It's not in the record, I don't think. I came up here and looked at the record yesterday in the clerk's office. I've seen a letter explaining it, but I haven't seen it in the record.
So what do we do when the burden is on the party that wants to have this judgment enforced, and we have a conclusory affidavit that doesn't really tell us what due diligence was done?
I think there's two options. I think because of the significant difference in all the other cases we've looked at, when you compare the evidence from the Postal Service in this case to what happened in other cases, I think you can affirm this case based on that. The alternative would be to remand it for findings on what due diligence was conducted, I guess, to effectuate proper service.
But why isn't the situation such that there's already a decision on that? Everybody had a chance to be in court, argue those issues, so why isn't, you know, right or wrong, isn't that decision made? Why should somebody get a second bite of the apple as to due diligence?
Yeah, I don't know why Mr. Jarman should get a second bite of the apple with this Postal Service evidence we have. I think it's persuasive. And if you read these other cases,
I think you're jumping the gun or escaping the question. My question is why should Dairyland get a second bite of the apple if it's reversed and remanded?
Well, I guess if the court thinks there's a deficiency in the record, then the deficiency should be corrected like it is in a lot of cases like this. I don't see that, but I don't think it's a second bite at the apple. I think it's a chance to make a record on things that I guess the court now thinks are significant, if that's the case. But the differences, and I think I've already mentioned them for the most part, are substantial between the Lecanidas case and all these other cases where service by mail is found to be ineffective versus those like the Georgia case, Tate, I think it's Hughes versus Tate or Tate versus Hughes, and others that find that the mailing, as long as you mail it, and they mail it to the address. Now, there's the argument that's been made by Mr. Jarman in the brief that, hey, I mean, my last known address was the address you had in the accident report. I think this court resolved that argument in the Lecanidas case. That would be useless. We all know that wouldn't have accomplished anything to send the documents to that address because it was clearly an error. I think here the record may be silent on how, but it's obvious that something was done to find an address. That mailing did not come back saying, we can't deliver this. These people don't live here. Came back saying refused. And I think that's a significant difference. I won't use all my time either unless others on the bench have questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Ginsbaugh, you have 10 minutes, sir.
The important thing about the Coley case, though, is it places the burden upon the plaintiff to show that he'd used due diligence. And my client believed when he looked at that police report and saw P.O. Box 113 that it had his correct address. He didn't see that it listed Hot Springs. But it did also go on. If you look at that report, it lists where he was working at, the phone number for his employer. It lists his home phone number. And more important, in the record, it shows that Jarman's wife is a deputy sheriff of Fall River County. You know, just a little bit of shoe leather and a telephone, that's all it takes for due diligence in this case, to call up the sheriff and say, you know a Brett Jarman? Yeah, I know a Brett Jarman. He used to work for the Edgemont Police Department. He now works for the Department of Corrections. And you know where Jarman's at? Yep, he's out in Chicago, but he'll be coming back. He comes back every 2 weeks. Send me the service of process, and I'll serve him the summons and complaint. That's what, you know, you would have expected from the due diligence. Like in the Coley case from Wyoming, they said we sent it to the sheriff and he couldn't find him anywhere. It's a lot like an acquired title action that a lot of you probably have done in your careers where You send the notice always to the sheriff, even though you know the decedent is dead, because you want the record to show that the sheriff couldn't find the decedent. He couldn't find the person of quiet title. And that's what you want here. He had the...
Isn't this different because it's an automobile accident, and there are certain statutes that cover that? How to do that?
That's correct. And there is. But, I mean, if you're looking for an analogy, is what I drew upon, is that you're always trying to find the defendant, particularly after, you know, in the probate proceedings where the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, ruled that you had to try to adequately notice the creditors in those probate proceedings. You just couldn't publish anymore if you knew who the creditors were and say that that was good enough to defeat their claims. It's the same thing here. That's why the Wyoming Supreme Court said the Due Process Clause places a burden upon a plaintiff now to use due diligence to find that defendant, because the defendant has the right, has an interest in being given notice of these proceedings and an opportunity to defend. And from Jarman's affidavit, he believes that he has a good defense under the joint...
Isn't it enough if we assume that the letter was delivered to his residence and that it's marked refused? Why isn't that enough?
Because he didn't receive it. That's what the Coley case says, is you have to...
Assuming he refused it?
He still didn't receive it. You don't have any record showing that he had notice of the proceedings. You have an envelope with a law firm's return address on it. You don't know what the contents are. You don't get the opportunity to open up that envelope, look at what it's in there, put it back in, and hand it back to the mailman. And clearly, it hasn't been disputed here that there is no street delivery. There's one person that delivers mail in Edgemont.
Why should he benefit... by act of refusing the notice?
What's that?
Why should he benefit by the act of him refusing the notice?
He contends he didn't refuse the notice. That's why in the record he shows that he was in Chicago at the time. So he's contending he never received any notice. The first notice he received is when the clerk received the application for enforcement of the foreign judgment. And the application for a writ of execution for the sheriff to go out and seize his property. Well, they sent that to the sheriff. They didn't put that in the mail to have his property delivered to him, did they? So they wanted the sheriff to have some involvement, but not in the get-go, not in the beginning. We contend they didn't use due diligence. And if they would have, we wouldn't be here today. For those reasons, we're asking you not to send it back on a remand hearing for a due diligence question, but to simply reverse the circuit court and determine that due diligence hasn't been shown.
Thank you, Mr. Gemsbach. The court runs on the hour because of internet broadcasting, so we will be in recess until 11 o'clock.